Welcome to episode 9 of the Fredcast. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In today's episode of the Fredcast, we'll start off with the news. Among this week's news, I've got race results and reactions from Europe and right here in California. I've also got the latest scandal involving Lance Armstrong, doping, and the UCI. Plus, more BPMS 150 news, an accident report on the United States' so-called cyclist-in-chief, Cuba's cycling comandante gets a new bike, more drunk cycling, and a cool comic strip that mentions two of my favorite subjects. Following the news, I have a real treat for you. On-the-spot reporting from along the course of this week's Tour of California from a Fredcast listener who is right in the thick of the racing and the racers each and every day. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast, and this one is going to be kind of special, so I hope you're going to enjoy it. Let's do the news first, and obviously topping the news, at least for those of us on the West Coast and those of us in the United States, cycling has arrived once again in the United States, and it's arrived wrapped up in gold. Gold for the Golden State of California, because last week was the inaugural Tour of California, and it was a huge success. So let's just talk very, very briefly about what happened, and then let's talk about what it means for American cycling. Last week, 7-stage event with a prologue, starting in San Francisco and ending up in Redondo Beach, California, Floyd Landis wins the inaugural Tour of California on Sunday after finishing the final stage in the main pack, not among the breakaway, but in the main pack. The actual final stage was won by Olaf Pollock of Germany. It was a 10-lap, 7.65-mile circuit race, and the stage was won in 2 hours, 50 minutes, and 27 seconds. But in the end, Floyd Landis held on to the overall lead for the fifth day since moving to the top with a dominating individual time trial victory in San Jose on Wednesday. Dave Zabriskie, who you'll recall was a winner of the 2005 Tour de France Prologue, finished in second, 29 seconds overall behind Floyd Landis. And third went to Bobby Julich, the reigning Olympic time trial bronze medalist. And he was 34 seconds back. Now, congratulations to Floyd, congratulations to Dave and to Bobby, but most of all, congratulations to the organizers of the Tour of California, because I think that this race exceeded everyone's expectations. There was a lot of talk before the race. Would the racers like the course? They did. Would the weather cooperate? It definitely did. If you watched any of the coverage on ESPN, you know that the weather out here in California was gorgeous last week. I wouldn't know. I was out of the country. But from everything that we've seen on TV, the weather was fantastic. And most importantly, would the fans show up? Would we see crowds anywhere near what we're used to seeing when we watch OLN and we watch the Tour de France every year on TV? And they did show up. And they were there. There were crowds lining the courses. When there was a summit, it was like Alpe d'Huez style crowds that were out there. Hundreds of thousands, well over a million fans watched this race. And the last day in Redondo Beach, if you watched it on TV or if you were there, you know how many people were there, 5, 6, 7, 8 deep watching this race. Overall, there is no doubt that the Tour of California has shown that that cycling is alive and well in the United States, which a lot of us already knew to begin with, and that the United States actually has cycling fans, that cycling races can actually bring people out, and that's a great thing because that's what the sponsors of these races want to see. That's what the Amgens and the Googles and the Adobes want to see. They want to see that the fans are going to come out to these races. So I don't think we've seen the last of the Tour of California. Everybody's already talking about what's going to happen next year, where it's going to go, when it's going to be, which teams are going to come. So I think it's just fantastic for American cycling. I guess a little bit on the negative side. I don't know about you, but because I was out of the country, I was constantly trying to go to the Amgen Tour of California website, and maybe it was overwhelmed, and that's why I had a few problems, especially the first days, and I think that they acknowledged that they had a few problems with their website. I know that every time I tried to get the live video feed to work, it never did. It always just said buffering, and it didn't matter if I was using a Mac or a PC, and it didn't matter that it had all the updated plugins that it needed to run it. So I think there's a couple of hiccups there, but that's to be expected. It was the first year of the race. But bottom line, it was a fantastic event, and I think that we'll all be looking forward to the Tour of California coming back again next year. And after the news in today's Fredcast, I have a really special treat for you. One of our Fredcast listeners is on the crew of ESPN for this year's Tour of California. And he was in a car that was following the racers as they went down the race course. He was actually leapfrogging the peloton in order to get good shots for the TV coverage. And he recorded a lot of what went on along the race course for the Fredcast. And so you'll hear a little bit of that just a little bit later. So while many of us had our eyes on the Tour of California and the pro tour teams that had come to the West Coast to race in this brand new event, halfway around the world in Belgium, a traditional early season race was taking place. The race is called, and by the way, forgive my pronunciation because I don't speak Flemish, the race is called the Omloop Het Volk. Now, the Omloop is a 201-kilometer single-day event that includes lots of those famous Belgian climbs and those famous Belgium cobblestones. Now, this year's Omloop saw 22 teams participate, nearly half of which were pro tour teams, and the others, of course, were in the U.S. for the Tour of California. The early favorite to win this year's Omloop was Tom Bonin of Quickstep, but in the end, it was Belgian Philippe Gilbert who walked away with victory after soloing away from a five-man break to win the race in 4 hours, 56 minutes, and 18 seconds. Second place went to fellow Belgian Bert de Vaille, with Leon van Boen of Holland coming in third in a sprint, and favorite pre-race favorite Tom Bonin came in 13th. So now with the Tour of California finished and with the Omloop starting off the European season in grand style, the Pro Tour teams are now headed to France. It's time for Paris-Nice. That begins this weekend, and I will have results on that for you very soon here on the Fredcast. Well, by now, you know what that fanfare is all about. It's time for the Lance Armstrong Stories of the Week. In August, the French newspaper L'Equipe published a story saying that they had documents that provided what they called indisputable evidence that Lance Armstrong had used the blood-boosting drug EPO during the 1999 Tour de France. At the time, the UCI denied that it had provided the forms on which the article was based to the journalist who wrote the story. Well, last week, the UCI announced that a member of its staff had indeed provided the French Sports Daily with 15 medical forms signed by Lance during the 99 Tour. Now, according to the reports, the L'Equipe journalist came to the UCI in July saying that he wanted to write an article, quote, confirming that Lance had never taken performance-enhancing drugs. And with Lance's permission, the UCI showed the journalist several doping control forms. They also provided the writer with what they thought was just one photocopy to use as an example. Well, it turns out that instead of just giving him one form, someone on the staff gave the journalist 15. Now, the UCI denies that any of this was done with ill intent, since they felt that the article was going to be about proving Lance's innocence. It wasn't supposed to be another allegation against Lance. Perhaps to prove their point, the medical officer who made the error, if you will, has stepped down, or, you know, perhaps he was forced to. Now, Lance has vehemently and repeatedly denied any doping or any wrongdoing every time somebody has alleged that he did something illegal. In the meantime, the UCI has decided, very, very recently, that they will not bring any action against Lance for what was supposedly found in those forms, because although they stand behind the tests, it turns out that the blood samples were only given to the UCI by the writers for research purposes, and they were given with the assurance of confidentiality. Also, when they did these tests, the tests were just done following research protocols, and they weren't following enforcement protocols. So, no action by the UCI against Lance, and the UCI, you know, at least admitted the wrongdoing in the fact that one of their medical officers provided forms that he never should have provided, thereby breaking the confidentiality that Lance was relying on. And briefly, Lance Armstrong for the last 7 years has definitely had something to do in July, and it was called the Tour de France. Well, he's got nothing to do this July, and so ESPN has hired him to host this year's 14th annual ESPY Awards. Now, the ESPYs, if you don't know, are the ESPN's equivalent of the Academy Awards or the Emmys or the Oscars. This is where ESPN honors athletes for what they've done in the past year and in the past years. This year's ESPY show is scheduled for July 16th, and it's going to support the V Foundation for Cancer Research, and it's also going to benefit the Lance Armstrong Foundation. And Lance is going to be the host. So in between watching whatever stage of the tour there is on that night, you will actually get a chance to see Lance Armstrong on ESPN hosting the ESPYs. Okay, a few weeks ago, I told you that the BP MS 150, which is the nation's largest multiple sclerosis charity ride, and it takes place down in Texas, I told you that they had closed their registration very early with over 13,000 registrants. Well, this week, they released a press release saying that they were going to reopen registration after carefully analyzing the number of registered participants. So if it was something that you were thinking about doing or something that maybe you've now heard about that you're interested in doing, you can go to www.ms150.org, and there are 500 slots available, and they will go quickly. It's a first-come, first-served basis. So if you're interested, if you're going to be in Texas or you'd like to be in Texas and you want to help out this very worthy cause, go ahead to the website. I've put links in the show notes, and give it a try. Well, I think a lot of you know that United States President George W. Bush is a cyclist, a mountain biker to be exact. And along with being a cyclist, I think a lot of people also know that he's had a couple of crashes. And one of those was a crash that he had at last year's G8 summit in Scotland, and that was in last July. And you may remember that he fell down, he hurt his hand. Well, according to a report that was released this week, what happened was, while Bush was shouting, "Thank you guys for coming," he lost control and he collided with an officer. And according to the documents that were found, the report says how there was a police unit there, and it was just outside of the Glen Eagles Hotel. Glen Eagles is a famous golf resort in Scotland. And according to the documents, quote, "As the president passed the junction at speed, he raised his left arm for the handlebars to wave to the police officers present while shouting, 'Thanks, you guys, for coming.' As he did this, he lost control of the cycle, falling to the ground, causing both himself and his bicycle to strike the officer on the lower legs." How many times have I told you people, be careful out there when you're riding your bikes. Make sure you've got good control. And I guess, you know, George isn't afraid. He's not listening to the Fredcast. So maybe we need to get the first cyclist to become perhaps the first Fredcast listener. Anyway, as we all know, he normally cycles around his ranch in Crawford, Texas, where Lance Armstrong recently rode with him a couple of months ago. And he also likes to ride near a Secret Service training facility in Beltsville, Maryland. So hopefully the president won't continue to have these spills, and hopefully he'll be just a little bit more careful when he's thanking the police for protecting him and helping out. And if George W. Bush cycling isn't enough for you, here's a story about Cuba's Fidel Castro. Last week, Belgian cycling legend Eddie Merckx was in Cuba for the annual International Vuelta, which is a Cuban cycling competition that ended on Sunday. While he was there, he donated 1,000 of his Eddie Merckx brand bikes to doctors who work in Cuba's easternmost province. And he also gave bikes to some Cuban cyclists. Now, the 1,001st donated bike was given to Fidel Castro himself through Cuban VP José Ramón Fernández, who also happens to be president of the Cuban Olympic Committee. Now, as of today, there's no word on whether the octogenarian comandante plans to ride the high-end bike or whether he can do so without crashing. So last week, I told you about how the state of South Dakota has now made it legal to ride your bike or your horse while drunk. This week, we have a story from Australia about a man who did exactly that and ended up losing the ability to get a driver's license. Julian Corpella is 18 years old, and he went out drinking with his buddies one night. As he pedaled home, police noticed that he was riding erratically and stopped him. And of course, it didn't help that he was wearing dark clothing and riding without lights. Now, when the police stopped him, Corpella at first became aggressive, and then once they subdued him, they recorded a blood alcohol level of 0.163, or more than three times the legal limit for drivers. Corpella pleaded guilty, and then he added, quote, "I had no idea you could get caught riding drunk on a bike." Magistrate Michael Halliday fined Corpella $1,000 for riding drunk and disqualified him from holding a driver's license for 10 months. He also imposed a $100 fine for the charge of obstructing police, but no conviction was recorded. The judge said, quote, "Riding a bike under the influence of liquor is just as dangerous to other motorists and to yourself as driving a motor vehicle. Somehow I think he hasn't been to South Dakota." And finally tonight, I found this great cartoon on the internet that mentions two of my favorite things in the whole wide world, and one of them, which I've already mentioned tonight. It's a comic strip called Frazz, F-R-A-Z-Z, and I've put a link in the show notes to it, and I'm just going to sort of read it to you. But if you want, go ahead and click on the show notes, and you'll be able to see it. But there's two guys, and one of them is reading a newspaper. I'm guessing he's probably reading Velo News. And the first guy comes in and he says, "Hey, what are you reading about?" And the second guy says, "The Omloop Het Volk." Remember, we talked about that at the top of the news. The first guy says, "A bicycle race in February in Belgium?" And the guy reading the newspaper says, "The Belgians handle cabin fever differently." First guy says, "What, they don't sell enough waffles to afford a Jimmy Buffett album?" As both a Parrothead and a Fred, I find that funny. And that's going to do it for the news this week. Coming up now, I have a special feature for you on the Amgen Tour of California. We've done a lot of talking about it. We've said how successful it was, and I'm sure you've read about it in the newspaper or in your favorite cycling periodical, or you've watched it on TV, or maybe you even went out and got to see the ride for yourself in person. But one of our listeners contacted me and told me that he was going to be a part of the Tour of California as part of ESPN's TV crew. And he wanted to know if there was any way that he could contribute to the Fredcast, since he was going to have this very unique vantage point for the race. And so he was kind enough to take his own time to record some audio for us so that we could all get a glimpse of what it's like to be in one of those cars that's chasing the peloton as they go down the road. And that listener's name is Greg, and he is a part of a company called SideEffects.tv, and you can check them out online. I've put links in the show notes, and they produce a number of different videos and television shows on cycling. So Greg put together a bunch of audio clips, and I'm going to play them for you, and I'll let you know what each of them is, and I hope you enjoy it. Okay, so in this first clip, Greg is going to introduce himself and talk a little bit about what the Tour of California is and a little bit about what will happen in the prologue. Greg?
Hi, this is Greg from SideEffects.tv, and I am going to be reporting for the Fredcast all along the Tour of California. I'm a video guy for ESPN on this shoot, and we are going to follow every stage, and I'm pretty excited. This should be a pretty cool event. It's been in the works for an awful long time. Various people have tried to put together the Tour of California in one format or another, and this one looks pretty good. So for those of you who have been living under a rock, the Tour of California is a seven-stage race that goes along the basically the coast of California, and it's February, so we're not going out into the Sierra Nevadas because there's snow and obvious issues up there. So seven stages, and it starts with a prologue, so really we have eight stages. And the prologue is going to go off in a few hours here. We're in San Francisco. The prologue course is a short course. It's basically going along the Embarcadero and working its way up to the top of Coit Tower. So it's, I think, about maybe 2 miles, somewhere in there. I don't have anything in front of me that says, but it's pretty short with a steep climb. And I'll tell you what, American cycling is alive and well in the U.S. There are so many people here. It is just amazing. They are combing every part of this course, and people are genuinely stoked. So without further ado, I've got to get up to my position, and I will report back to you with kind of the playout for the day. So as time goes on, we'll check in throughout the Tour of California. I'll let you know what it's like to be on the scene throughout the entire Tour of California, so stay tuned.
Okay, in this next clip, Greg's going to tell us a little bit about what he's doing and about his experiences in the car, out on the race course, and what it's like to be a photographer in a car following all these racers down the road.
And we finished today's stage from Sausalito to Santa Rosa, and it's like living in a postcard. It is so beautiful, no wind, and as far as the eye can see, out over the ocean. For our crew, which is made up of me and my buddy Evan, we are in a car with a camera, and we've got two motorcycles out front that follow the leaders and the chase groups, and those are RF signaled back to a mobile production truck at the finish line, and there's a offline editing truck there that feeds that truck with the show opens and bumpers and such. And then there's also a separate minivan that has Bob Roll and Paul Sherwood in it doing the play-by-play call from inside the minivan that's all piped into the large production truck. So it's really interesting to watch all that be put together at the end of the finish and how this all works. As far as today's stage, let me get back to what we're doing. We are doing what's called pass-by, and we are in a car, and we are expected to leapfrog the peloton and the caravan throughout the day. So if any of you have ever looked at one of the maps that shows each of the stages from the Tour of California, it's pretty crazy. There are no loop-through roads to cut around and get, you know, leapfrog the pack, and they're moving so fast. I think average speed today was like 28 miles an hour. So we shot the start of the race, and then we did our best to get through all the traffic that was following the race up to the peloton and then past the peloton to get a shot on the other side. And all I can tell you is passing CHP vehicles that are hired by the tour to follow and keep things safe, passing these guys on the wrong side of double yellows at 65 miles an hour on 30 mile an hour roads is pretty comical. But the real chaos is when we get up into the group and you're on your horn and they will not move for you, and you've got two wheels in the dirt and two wheels on the road. It's just nuts. The beginning of these things, everybody's a bit of a bag of nerves to see how it all shakes out, and it was pretty exciting. I mean, we had some interesting scenarios today that I won't really go into for national broadcast, but the one thing I can tell you is this thing is so much bigger than I even could have imagined going in. How many crews that are responsible for different things? For instance, there's probably 40 or 50 motorcycle marshals that are traveling with this crew, and their job is to hang with riders that may fall off the back and keep them protected. Go ahead of the group and sit at driveways that may enter the course or at intersections, and just general support to keep this entire group of riders safe. And it works like clockwork. It's amazing.
Okay, in this next clip, Greg is going to be in the car, so it's a little noisy. I apologize about that. And he's talking to his driver, Evan Call, who has a lot of experience in driving for cycling events. He's been doing it since the mid-80s. So here are Evan and Greg from On the Road during Stage 2 of the Tour of California.
They are talking about the...
Welcome back. This is Greg Batani from SideEffects.tv, and we're on the third day of the Tour of California, about to start the Stage 2 from Martinez to San Jose, and I'm sitting here in the car traveling to the venue with my driver, Evan Call, who's got a pretty extensive resume in the bicycle world. Evan?
Yes. How
about
how are you?
I'm doing good, man.
Good.
This has been an exciting time we've spent for the last 48, 72 hours, whatever it's been. But it's starting to become a blur, and one day is bleeding into the next with little sleep and long days. But it's been quite a caravan. I can't believe how big this event is. So, hey, can you give the listeners a little idea on your background and what you've done, and then I'll explain how yesterday went.
Sure, happy to. Done three Olympic Games, Atlanta, Salt Lake, and Sydney, and several Goodwill games, including the last one in Brisbane, where I was driving the two top stars, Michelle Kwan and track star Michael Johnson, around, and then done a whole hundreds of probably national championships, course classic, Tours of China. So it's been going on almost continuously for about 20 years now.
Wow, and pretty much all bicycle related venues, right?
A lot of it, most of it, yeah, the majority of it. That's how I got started, going to school in Boulder and starting the Course Classic, age 6.
So to give the listeners a little insight as to what's going on here, because it's pretty, by the time we get to the hotel at the end of the day and the feed's gone up to the satellite and we're watching the actual show from that day, it's really hard to see that and see such a reduced version of what we see in the caravan and you know, the hotel with the racers and everybody just milling around and doing their thing. Could you maybe give us a little insight to what the caravan's made up of and how many vehicles are really traveling with this group to help protect them and help support them and the protocol that goes along with that?
Sure, happy to. And I'd like to say that most of the coverage, obviously, you see is focused on the athletes, as it should be. But to support the event, you know, it's been working on it for a year now. There's probably a total entourage traveling around of several hundred people. You know, there's like 100 athletes or so. Hundreds of vehicles, all different sizes, trucks, cars, officials, a whole television crew. It's like a traveling circus. It's pretty hard to fathom it for most folks, but when you see it up close, it's a pretty amazing operation to what goes into making it work.
You know, I was looking at the technical manual. What the technical manual is it's literally a book that's given to us when we first get there that explains the protocol of everything from drug testing to where the athletes are to be at what times to the starts to detailed maps of mile markers and turns and on and on. And for us shooting television, our particular position is pass-by, so that means that we are in the traveling caravan out on the road, and our job is to get through this peloton out ahead, set up our next shot, and let it pass by, and then quickly get back in to the mix and work our way back up. And part of the procedures of that is for us to be on race radio and request permission to pass through the commissary car. And the director of the entire race is the guy that you've seen, you know, with Tour de France coverage with his head poked out of the sunroof and whatnot. So it's a little tricky. And yesterday, being stage one, and we were stuck coming out of Sausalito out onto the coast on Highway 1, and then you sprinkle in all the spectators and just the happenstance of travelers out there with motorhomes and trailers and whatnot. Give us a little insight, Evan, to what it was like for us to try to get by to get our one shot yesterday.
Well, I must say, of all the years of experience I had, that was right at the top as far as white knuckle driving maneuvers. But the caravan itself is, you know, contained of its traveling, like basically road enclosure, as if you'd imagine what the president travels in almost. And you've got in the center of that is all the riders, and then out extending from each end of that is team vehicles, officials' vehicles, police vehicles, media vehicles, VIP vehicles. You know, it can be up to 50 vehicles, 25 at each end of this caravan, and there's all this entire protocol as far as moving through it and who can and who can't. Obviously, regular vehicles can't because the police are up ahead, closing side streets, moving behind them, opening it up as everybody passes. So we need to come up on the back and have, there's communication between all the vehicles, and we have to go through the protocol of asking for permission to come forward and then passing through all the vehicles and all the motorcycle marshals. And it is kind of a ballet on the road there. Things are moving, you know, at a pretty good speed, and you're windy road up and down, around, and you're got vehicles side to side, three abreast maybe, and then weaving through, you get up to the back, and the commissar gives you the go ahead after you've been communicating via the radio to go through, and then you got to try and get by the Peloton. And yesterday we weren't that familiar. We weren't familiar at all with this particular road, which is typical.
Well, it sounds like it gets pretty chaotic out there for Greg and for Evan, his driver. And one of the ways that, as I've said, that they make sure that everything works in this ballet or this dance that they were talking about is they have to communicate on race radio. So here is Greg giving you just a little bit of a taste of what race radio is all about and a little bit of what it sounds like.
Anyone else?
So what you hear in the background is race radio. This is Greg from SideEffects.tv with Evan Call again, and we're in our TV car in the caravan on Highway 1. And we're traveling along in the about the, what are we at, about mile 50 of 130 miles today.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And it is picture postcard Arnold Schwarzenegger, sell California to everybody else in the world, beautiful. And that's to say 70 degrees in February here, not a wisp of wind on the ocean, and it's bluebird, huh, Evan?
Yeah, it's perfect. Textbook day. It's got to be one of the most beautiful days I've ever seen in a bike race. And we're sitting back with the team vehicles, just went through the feed zone, so obviously we had some activity, team vehicles dropping off, getting back in the caravan. And we've got the California Highway Patrol behind us sanctioning all our illegal maneuvers.
Yeah, it really is a strange feeling to have the road basically closed off with a rolling closure for this race. And we've got complete access to do whatever we want to do, really, you know, which of course is up to discretion of safety and what really needs to be done. But one of the things we wanted to talk about in the middle of this stage is race radio and how communications go on throughout the entire caravan. Let's wait till she's done for a second.
By three chasers, riders number 74, 92, 92, and 113, 113. They are 30 seconds back.
So that's a pretty good example of what happens. And she'll give it in French now. So she is in one of the head cars, and she's relaying back to everybody through a repeater. If we can actually turn this down a little bit. She's relaying back through a repeater to the finish line and to all the caravan vehicles, letting everyone know if there's a medical or a wheel change or a team car needs to come forward for assistance with one of their riders, or just basic instruction on how people are to move around throughout the caravan. She's also, once we get a good break here, she'll give the time differentials between the break and the chase, or the break and the peloton, or what have you, and then she'll also announce if the group comes back together, achieving grupo contacto, eh? So anyhow, if you've never done this drive, which I've lived in California all my life, and I have a hard time believing this is the first time that I've done it, and we're at this point going up hills at about just under 20 miles an hour and downhills at about 45, it's unbelievable. Everything a postcard could try to display, but just absolutely crazy. So you're living in Colorado, Evan. You've done this drive before, right? Was weather like this when you were down here?
I've done this drive in a variety of conditions. I think one time it was like this, but other times it's been, you know, foggy, rainy, cold, nasty, really pretty ugly weather here on the coast. Is usually more often the case than it is today. We're very lucky to have a beautiful sunny day.
Yeah, you've got it. We're up on a hill right now and looking out in the ocean. You've got to be able to see at least 30 miles. It's unbelievable, and there's whales out there. It's this is everything a bicycle race should be, and hopefully everybody who's listening to this got a chance to catch it on ESPN2, and if not, I'm sure there'll be rebroadcasts or DVDs packaged of it or whatnot. But you know, the other thing that I wanted to mention was You know, not everybody's a cyclist, and in some cases, a lot of people are totally against having, you know, being impeded in their cars by a cyclist on the right-hand side of the road. And it's really, really blown me away at how excited people, young and old, are about the bike race. We were in Martinez for the start of the race yesterday, and was it yesterday?
Yeah. Martinez yesterday.
Exactly. So, and we talked to some of the locals, and I kind of stood back during some of the early parade laps, and there were old people leaning out over the barriers that must have been almost 80 years old, and they just excited as you've ever seen anybody. It was amazing. So anyway, I think the Tour of California is really really living up to all expectations. I'm sure they're actually exceeding expectations, don't you think, Evan?
Yeah, sure. And come to think of it, it was actually 2 days ago. Yesterday was the time trial.
Right.
But it goes back to the fact that, you know, it's stage four, but race day five, including the prologue. And by this time, you know, we're sleeping in strange beds, limited amount of sleep, you know, fun with the friends, a lot of stress. You start to wear out a little bit at this point. You still got several days to go, so it's tough to stay sharp and make sure everybody stays safe.
But all in all, very exciting time, and we will be reporting back to you with stages to come and the results of today. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. This is Greg from SideEffects.com.
Well, Greg and Evan also spent some time, besides just driving around in their car, also spent some time in interviews. And Greg was lucky enough to be involved in interviews with guys like Stuart O'Grady and Nelson Vales and Team CSC's Bobby Julich. And the interviews were amazing, and there were a couple of really great quotes in there. Unfortunately, the audio was just a little bit low, and as try as I might and staying up really late, I just wasn't able to really get anything good out of it that you were actually going to be able to hear. So just trust me when I say that everybody was really excited and really jazzed about the Tour of California, and they really had high hopes for the future for it. Not that it's going to become the Tour de France, and Bobby Julich spent some time talking about that, but that it could become very easily the premier cycling event in North America in years to come. So that was really, really great to hear. So in a final clip from Greg, he's going to give you a wrap-up after stage number 7 in Redondo Beach. So one more time, here is our roving correspondent, Greg Battanti from SideEffects.tv. Greg?
So this is Greg from SideEffects.tv. At the end of stage 7 in Redondo Beach, which is fairly near LAX, beautiful little beach town. And today's race didn't disappoint. There were people lining the entire course, and it was a circuit race, 76.5 miles, and each of the laps was just under 8 miles. So immediately there was a breakaway of riders that weren't in the general category or general classification standings. They didn't have anything to lose by getting out there and trying to go for a stage win. And at one point they had 8 minutes on the field, so it was probably a little confusing to some of the spectators, as when the main peloton had come by, they'd just be sitting there talking while these guys in the front, you know, group of 6 or 8, were just charging. And as the race evolved, the peloton slowly crept back up, swallowed them up, and there was a sprint finish today, 2 days in a row. A German from T-Mobile, Pollock, won. And I might mention there's a new team, the Toyota team, which is headed by Jonathan Vaucners, and it looks like it's well funded, I'll tell you that. And they've got some real hitters on that team. They were actually able to bag a couple stage wins during this, so that was really good to see those guys come out and have some success on this. But in the end, our buddy Floyd Landis from California took top honors, and pretty happy to see that. That guy was one gracious guy in all our interviews, and you know, always has time for everybody. So congratulations, Floyd. And in just kind of wrapping this whole thing up, it looks like the rain's going to start tonight, and we just slid through eye of the storm. And I'd like to say congratulations to all those people who really put a lot behind it to make this thing happen. They all know who they are, and congratulations, you guys, because this is the biggest party I could have ever been involved in. So thanks for listening. This is Greg from SideEffects.tv reporting from the Amgen Tour of California for the Fredcast. Thanks, David.
No, thank you, Greg. That was really phenomenal. I was really bummed that I wasn't able to be here for the Tour of California, and actually being able to listen to Greg's reports was almost like just being there and getting an insight into what some of the technical people do to support the racers and to support the fans out there on these races. It was really, really fantastic. So my sincere thanks to Greg Batanti from Side Effects Productions at www.sideeffects.tv, as well as to his faithful driver. So guys, thank you so much for doing that. And if any of the rest of you are out there this year and you're going to races, feel free to do a little bit of what Greg did. It was just fantastic to be able to bring that to the Fredcast listeners. And we hope that you enjoyed it. All right, that's mostly going to do it for the show tonight. Just a couple of shout outs for you. First one to Tim in Crestline, California. Tim sent me a little bit of info on what he'd like to see in the way of the audio from the Fredcast, and I'm working on that a little bit. And he had a little bit of a problem with timing on the last couple of shows, and I hopefully have worked that out in this show. Also wanted to say hi to Andy from the band Ocean Street. You know, I've played Ocean Street as my PodSafe cycling music in the past couple of shows, and Andy was kind enough to send me an email and let me know how much he appreciated it, and also to tell me that, in fact, he's a cyclist. So that's really cool. That definitely is PodSafe cycling music. Also a shout out to Brian from Michigan. Brian was saying that not only is he a Fred, but he's also a frog. And he says frog can, well, depending on what time of year it is, frog can stand for fit riding old guy or fat riding old guy. So Brian, thanks a lot for that new acronym. And wanted also to say hi to Jim in Dayton, Ohio. Hi to Adam from Oregon, Joe in Ohio, Brian in Chicago, Carlton in Tennessee, and also Ray in Miami, Florida. And Ray wanted me to mention to you just a couple more comments about pace lines. You know, I mentioned pace lines in the show about training for your first century. And one of the things that Ray said is, you know, he lives in Miami, and he was saying that he just feels that there's no cycling ethics down there. He said a couple of nights ago, a buddy and he were riding at a pretty steady pace, not too slow, not too fast. And along comes a pack of about 15 to 20 riders going by at about 19 to 20 miles per hour, and not a single one of them called out on your left or anything. They just pushed on by, and actually he felt that he was really being squeezed toward the sidewalk and that it was pretty dangerous. And I told him that unfortunately, I don't think that that's necessarily a Miami thing. One of the things that I've found is that, you know, like anything in life, there's plenty of people out there who don't have any manners or any ethics, and just really don't care. They just sort of feel if they can go faster than you, or, you know, they're in a club, or they all are decked out in Discovery clothing, you know, they just feel like they own the road. And that's no different than driving. It's no different than anything else in life where there's just some jerks out there. So the most important thing that I would say to those of you that are out there and are worried about cycling ethics is pretty much just make sure you're doing the right thing, and hopefully other people will model themselves after you. So Ray, I appreciate those comments, and hopefully that was helpful for everyone out there. Now, wanted to thank you, all of you, for voting for the Fredcast on Podcast Alley last month. I'm not quite sure where we came out, but I know we were certainly in the top 135 podcasts. And if you go to Podcast Alley and you see the tens of thousands of podcasts that are on there, I just want to say thank you for that. That's fantastic. But don't stop. Please go back to Podcast Alley. It's a new month, and right now we're not ranked. So please go to Podcast Alley. There's a link in the show notes, and vote for the Fredcast. I would really, really appreciate it. And keep telling your friends about the Fredcast as well. And finally tonight, if you want to contact the Fredcast and perhaps maybe you want to send an audio comment, you can do that in the email. That's thefredcast@gmail.com, or you can call the Fredcast listener hotline at 206 206- FRED. You can also do the Frapper map, and you can find the Frapper map or a link to it on our website, and that's at www.thefredcast.com. And finally tonight, our PodSafe cycling music for this evening, it's a song called Summertime, because thank goodness spring is coming, and hopefully daylight savings time will be upon us really quickly so we can all stop riding in the dark. Again, the song is called Summertime. It's by Brother Love. It comes to us from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. I've got links to that site in the show notes, as well as links to Brother Love's website. So once again, thank you for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed. Thank you for telling your friends about the Fredcast. I love hearing from you and appreciate all your support and all your comments, and we will just keep on doing this. So that's going to do it for the Fredcast for this evening. Enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.